Hey, everybody. Welcome to the premiere episode of Satsang with G. I am so delighted to be here. I'm on BBS Radio, BBS Radio Network. I'm also on YouTube Live and on Facebook Live all at the same time. A bit of a technological wonder has taken place. And I'm so very, very glad to be back in the medium that is so dear to me. I just love radio. As many of you know, I used to make a living just doing commercial, just using my voice. So I just love this medium more than anything. And I love the fact that it's such a great venue for being able to reach out and invite people in to what I consider to be the most sacred and the most significant inquiry in the entire human kingdom, which is why I named the premiere episode The Search for Truth. And boy, there's so much associated with that. But let me just preface the entire thing by saying, let's just kind of cut right to the chase. And the chase is this. No matter where you look in the world, you're not going to find what you're looking for because it's not there. I know that that's a bold statement, and it's not really anybody's fault that we keep looking in the wrong place. It's that we've all been conditioned to look in the wrong place. We were all trained to do that. You know, how many of us got an upbringing where we were trained to look inside and, you know, and find the truth within? None of us did. We were all taught that happiness was in external circumstances. That's where you found the truth. And another word for truth is to just say happiness, peace, or freedom. You can put a lot of different spins on it, but the truth is what you come home to. I mean, it's the truth after all, right? So you see, our world is obsessively, psychotically committed to this pursuit of acquiring more stuff. We really think that that's the key to happiness. The world is run by the marketplace. It's run by economics, our political systems. Everything is this accumulation of stuff. It really just feeds our most basic instincts, which is not to say that there's anything wrong with having stuff. Obviously, I've got a lot of stuff, all the equipment that makes this happen and the network and the nice flowers sitting next to me. There's plenty. It's just you can't expect these things to deliver anything other than what they are. They're not the truth. They're not the lasting peace and happiness. These flowers, as beautiful they are going to wilt. They're going to just, you know, go back to the dust from which they came, as is this body, as is your body, as all bodies. And this relentless pursuit of stuff is come. We're actually seeing the cost of it now. Humanity is paying the price for it. The world is paying for the price for it. You see, the pursuit of truth, this idea of seeking truth, when it's rightly directed, has been the reason humanity has advanced. I mean, it is our curiosity as to why we're here, what matters, what's valuable, we just are overwhelmed. From the time we became human enough to look up at the sky and go, good God, this is so vast, and I'm aware of it. What in the world could this possibly mean? That search has made us better. It's made us more noble. It's made us more compassionate. It's made us more intelligent. It has made us, you know, capable of incredibly beautiful innovations, you know, both technologically and spiritually. It is the very best when it's directed towards the very best. But that natural desire to know what's up, to know what the truth is, has just been kind of distorted in our modern world. And turned, the pursuit of happiness has become the pursuit of stuff. And yet the age in which we live in, with all of this wonderful stuff and conveniences and cool things, is the beneficiary of this this search. this search has revealed so many things about the way what the universe is and how it works and what we have at our disposal. We are now living the benefits, the fruits of that, and yet we've kind of killed the goose that laid the golden egg, right? To get all the golden eggs, only to find out the eggs weren't there wasn't an abundance of eggs in the goose. It was the goose itself that was needed. So I said in the beginning, no matter where you look, you're not going to find what you're looking for. Because what we're really looking for, the real truth, is the truth of you. Who are you? Right? Who are you? That's really what we want to know. I mean, if I ask you to describe your car, you have no problem, right? Oh, yeah, it's my car. You know, maybe even really like your car and describe it in detail. If I ask you to describe your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your kids, you'll pull out pictures, in great detail. But then I say, yes, but you, who are you? You'll draw a blank. You'll say, well, and you'll talk about your beliefs, you'll talk about your possessions, you'll talk about your likes and dislikes, your desires, your frustrated dreams, your realized dreams. You'll talk about all sorts of things that are peripheral. I go, well, yeah, okay, I understand. You know your desires, but who are you? Who is it that has the desires? When we really stop for a second, we don't really know. We haven't bothered to actually look more at the one having the experience than the experience itself. So if we're going to find the truth about ourselves, which is happiness, peace, and freedom, we're going to have to look in the right place. If it's the truth of ourself, it's obvious that the answer has to be here, in the self, right? It can't be out there somewhere, because I'm not out there. There's a lot of cool things out there, but I'm right here. So somehow I need to turn that attention around and start looking in the place that it is. And that's what satsang is. Satsang is a Sanskrit word. It simply means communing with truth. It means hanging out with the truth. And it's often interpreted as hanging out with a spiritual teacher who knows the truth, and there's the dispensation, he hands out wisdom and that sort of thing. But that's not it at all, because that would still be the truth outside of you. The best teacher is only the one who turns your head around and guides you back into looking for yourself, questioning your own life, questioning your own experience, asking yourself the important questions. And when you do that, it becomes a matter of self-discovery. So the truth isn't knowledge, right? It's not something that you can point at and say, that's me. It's closer than intimate. It's closer than your breath. It's closer than your heartbeat. It's closer than your thoughts. In fact, it's the thing that is hearing your thoughts. It's the thing that feels or hears the heartbeat. It's the thing that notices your breath. It's the thing that experiences everything. I mean, really, if I was to ask you who you are, at a bare minimum, you must be whoever it is that's hearing my voice right now. Whoever it is that, whatever it is, that's having the experience of being right this second, where everything is registering. I mean, this microphone I'm talking into isn't hearing my voice. It's picking up vibrations and changing it into electrical impulse, which goes to this little mixer over here, and then that goes out the back end and goes across more wires, and it ends up somewhere in I think it's Paradise, California, where it's picked up a switchboard, and now it's going out over the radio, or it's going out over YouTube. None of those piece parts in the middle are actually hearing my voice. I'm carrying it, but they're not hearing it. You're hearing it. The buck stops there. If there's anything that's you, anything that deserves the name of I, well, that's it. That's got to be it. So that's where we want to explore. Now, when I speak in these lofty terms like this, like the search for truth and all that, people can feel kind of, well, I just got to ask really big questions. It's not like I invite all questions. I did a radio show a couple years ago that I stopped for a while, I did over 100 shows. I have hundreds of hours of material on it. It was just called Conversations with G, and I answered any question that came up, pretty much just like I'm doing, I'll do now. But the idea is to turn it in a direction that turns your attention back inside. So if you've got a question about finances and money and metaphysics, the law of attraction and all of that kind of stuff, or romance and relationships and family and health, all the stuff that concern our day-to-day lives, bring them forward. Just don't be surprised if I turn them around on you, because the answer to every question, the ultimate answer to every question, excuse me, first off, the question behind every question is, where do I find lasting happiness? That's always what we're asking for. I mean, why do we pursue anything in life? Anything. Is it so that, because we think the thing that we acquire is going to bring us happiness. And oftentimes, for a little bit, it does. And then it fades. It gets old, runs out, that beautiful shiny car gets a ding in the parking lot at Costco or something. And before you know it, it's not the shiny new car anymore. Even people in our relationships, they become so familiar. We don't even know each other exist. This isn't a flaw. This is human nature. Things run their course. We suffer because we try to make permanent that which is inherently impermanent. We look for the permanent, the changeless, in that which is changing, which makes no sense, right? If we really want to know lasting happiness, we've got to look for it somewhere that lasts, somewhere that doesn't change, somewhere that is totally reliable. And to find that place where we can anchor the happiness is what satsang is all about. So even if whatever the presenting symptom in your life is, money struggle or a relationship problem, at the heart of it is an ignorance or a misconception of who you think you are. It's really that simple. It always starts there. You know, if you put on sunglasses, the world's going to look a different color. If you put on rose-colored glasses, it's going to look a different color. Right? If you're looking at it through a window that's all smudged with, you know, a screen and bugs around it and stuff, you're not going to see it clearly. You can't possibly see the world clearly, see the world as it is, see it through the eyes of truth, when the eyes aren't clear. You can't know what you're looking at until you know who it is that's doing the looking, which is why I will consistently turn your attention around so that you're looking back on yourself. And that's what we're here to do. That's what satsang is about. And I really honor those of you who have come to join me on any of the medium that I'm here on, because you've taken an hour out of your day, out of this Sunday, to make a sacred space for yourself, to make a place to actually say, to pursue this search for truth. I mean, all the rest of the week, you know, we've got stuff to do, and even me, you know, I'm doing this radio show, I have hours it's spent getting ready to be able to do all this and putting all the equipment together. There's all the stuff that has to get done in life, in our everyday life. But to consciously, with intention, carve out a chunk of it and say, you know what, this is for the inquiry into my true self. That is what we're here for. And I salute you. I really honor you for having decided to do that. The value of it is really quite unspeakable. It is a very rare thing. It's a very rare thing when somebody has the opportunity in their lifetime to actually hear things like this. It's an even rarer thing if they stop and heed and make it a part of their life and make that inquiry something that matters enough that they actually start following, they call in Buddhism, the Dharma. And it's an even rarer one that actually follows that to its completion. So we're here to ask and answer questions, to challenge assumptions, to just explore this most sacred but most simple and beautiful and heartwarming question of, who am I really? So I am always open for questions. I actually have some that I've already received from email. Don't email me during the show. I have too many places I have to look for it right now. And my my in-house producer is in Pennsylvania right now, so I'm kind of alone with the technology as well. So I can handle chats on Facebook Live. I can handle some, and I can handle the chat on YouTube. And then we also have an 800 number for you to call in. If you're looking at it through the player that I created, you'll see the number on there. If you're not, it's 888-627-6008. And if I got that wrong, Doug, my radio producer, will correct me. 888-627-6008. And you'll get the phone call answered, and we'll get right to the right to that. And we actually do have somebody from on line one. We have Susan from British Columbia in Canada. So go ahead, Doug. Why don't you patch her through?
Hi. How are you?
Very good. Very, very good. Wonderful to hear you.
I actually thought of a question, but I would have called anyways, even if I didn't have one. I find this an amazingly intense time of change, not just for me, like, but for everyone, which is blowing me away. And I remember going through all the stuff I'm going through now, like in 1987. Only then I was completely clueless, and I just thought I was, if not insane, a big problem. But now I'm kind of clear on what's going on. And my family was interesting. My dad was like this visionary, told me I was light every night at dinner and stuff. And I expect I could talk to my mom and my sister about what's going on now, because he told us it was going to happen, and he told us what was going to happen to the American public, like, years and years and years ago, and it's happening, and no one talks to me. They don't want it. Actually, my mom, who probably could, says, I don't want to. I'm not ready. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here all day, I'm vibrating, like, way out of my comfort zone, going, well, I'll talk to myself and I'll meditate, and that's okay, but, like, I really can't discuss this with anybody. Maybe that's my own resistance. Who knows? It's bizarre, but, like, everything's changing just the way I always hoped it would. But, yeah.
It is kind of bittersweet, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm losing what I always wanted to lose. Gee, but it makes me sad anyways, but that's okay.
Well, that's a really wonderful point you make. And if you... there's a slight echo with you, and I'm just trying to speak a little softer so I don't trigger it. It's just because I think you've got it on, maybe on your speaker in the background. So anyway.
Okay, wait. Okay. Better.
But you got to be able to hear me. So.
Yeah.
We pray for change, but we don't want to change. You know, there's a funny saying I heard a comedian say once: everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Right. But it's we have to understand the mechanism behind that, and once you do, it really makes a whole lot of sense. Coming to understand that mechanism is what brought me to create Inner Reconciliation, which is the process I teach at Master Heart Institute. And it's very simply this: the part of you that wakes up to a deeper vision, a deeper idea of what's possible. It can be a very deep spiritual insight, or it can be much more practical, just, you know, starting a business, or, you know, making a change in your relationship, or just, you know, doing something different with your kids. Any kind of idea that emerges that's clearly valuable, clearly progressive, clearly going to take you somewhere, but is going to involve some kind of shift or change to yourself, or the whatever, you know, maybe it's a family unit or whatever it is going to meet with inner resistance. It has to. Mm-hmm. The part of you that sees what is possible and begins to reach for it is not the part that's maintaining your everyday sense of well-being and safety. We have to understand that I call the one the visionary, which is a part that's very much alive in us. I call the other the tribe, which is this very natural energy of the safety mechanism of the nervous system. It's also in the chakra system. It's the first chakra. It's this energy of just pure physical existence. And it doesn't have any interest in anything progressive or wonderful or beautiful. It has no vision. It only is interested in being safe. It's already safe. It's got the entire environment mapped. It knows exactly what to do in every circumstance so that you're safe. Why are you rocking the boat? That's the attitude of that energy within us. The thing is that we think of ourselves as this being this one thing, and you are this one thing. I call that the light at the center, that the consciousness that's behind the whole thing. But we mistake the functioning of the energy system or the nervous system for ourselves, and we don't realize there's a bunch of different voices in there speaking, and they're each arguing for a different point of view. So what normally happens, and one of the reasons why I you know, inner reconciliation is not self-help, and I call it the self-help treadmill, is that what we try to do then is we take the position that this vision is the right thing to do, and I try to force it down the throat of these energies inside of me that are resisting it. And of course, what do you do if somebody tries to force something down your throat? You resist even more. Yeah, I mean, out come the claws, right? Out comes the heavy artillery. Right? It's very natural for that to happen, because now, is from the perspective of the energy that wants to keep you safe, which means it does not want change to occur because it doesn't know if in this new environment it can keep you safe, you now have become a threat to yourself.
Yes.
And it's just going to put up every roadblock it can possibly put up. And believe me, it's way better at defending itself than you are at bending it to your will. So yeah. What's the solution? Well, that's why I call
it
reconciliation.
End itself.
That's why I call it inner reconciliation. If you recognize that that is what this energy does, that's always what it's going to do. You completely accept it and love it for what it does do. It becomes willing to do its job in a different way, which then allows it to kind of migrate to a place where it is still keeping you safe, but is also offering you a little bit more freedom. Let me tell you that. Go ahead.
I have this deeper sense, like if you just sit me quiet for 10 minutes, there is no danger. I spent my whole life, I was taught how to protect myself. I was like, there's no danger. if I look inside, that's what I see.
the reality is, in our modern life, there isn't. The genuine danger that we all deal with, it almost never happens. The real life-threatening stuff. The 99% of the danger, that the threats we feel, are totally imaginary. But to the energy system that has been trained into the defensive posture, they feel and seem very real, and it's reacting the same way it would react if the bear just started chasing you in the woods.
What about, could it be possibly time in the development of humanity that we could let, the system won't go anyways, it's so over-conditioned, but if I just let it go, I'm fine.
Here's what happens.
I don't need it. There's no reason for it, but it's there, but there's no reason for it anymore?
Well, there is still reason for it. Danger hasn't been completely eliminated. Unfortunately, the danger now is all in our minds. It's all through propaganda and marketing, and it's the danger we hold for each other. It's the ego.
We're
warning.
Creating the danger.
So we are creating the danger. What we want is the system to be trained to the point where the danger it reacts to is real danger, not imaginary. That's the key.
Oh, I really want to, can I argue? I'm not arguing. I have to come from this family of survivors in the Holocaust and stuff. And every story they've ever told me, when it was, the pressure was on, they just surrendered. And they said stuff they were trained not to say. They talked back when they shouldn't have talked back. They did wild, crazy stuff. And they survived and everybody else died. Not because their training served them, but because they abandoned everything. That's every story comes out that way, really.
Yes. Yes. There's a beautiful line from Anthony DeMello who said, enlightenment is total surrender to the inevitable. There is an enormous peace that comes when you surrender. And this surrender is not a resignation. It's an acknowledgement of what actually is. And what happens is it draws from within you resources that you didn't know you had. Because now it's not your mind, it's not your conditioning, it's not your training that's responding, it's your natural being that's responding. And your being was designed to respond to every circumstance appropriately and wisely. And when it's functioning in as it was intended, that's exactly what it'll do.
So it's depending on another. Well, it's not depend, but you're using another system or an alternate.
We do have to take on the job of retraining it, but we retrain it through love and respect. Right? You don't ask the cat to bark. Right? Don't ask don't ask the safety mechanism to be interested in your freedom and romance and a vision. It doesn't care.
Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't care. Are you safe? Good. You're not? We got to do something about it. And it is the most powerful energy in the system. It has the capacity to shut down anything, which is why when we get into that state, the defensive posture, our energy gets drained. It's like when you get a cold, you know? You get listless. All the energy is going elsewhere because it's fighting off the intruder. You know, the more subtle energy of our creative life, it operates the same way. Where the defensive posture, the energy is drained from the creative expression. And we simply don't have the energy available to us. So when we become clear-sighted about when we're in danger and when we're not, and not just that we see it, that it literally sinks into the cells of your body, And the conditioning that just assumed there was danger is allowed to open up and see that there isn't any danger. See for itself, not you trying to force it, but you through unconditional love and acceptance, it begins to feel like it's safe and it begins to come out of its shell. And when that happens, that energy begins to return to you. That really is how it works. I don't have time in the show to go into the entire process of how it works, that you can go to gpwalsh.com/IR, and there's a free course I have called You're Not Broken. It's a free workshop.
I would ask is, do you have experiences in any amount of relationships that are based on being here in presence, like with people who are actually perceptive in the moment, or everything? Sometimes my life in flesh is all about that protective system I learned, and I long for more relation in the world that is creative. There we go.
Yes, I have, but they're few and far between. You know, what I would say is, if you're really wanting a relationship of that quality, you need to be in a relationship with yourself expressing that level of quality. How well are you at being with yourself? In exactly
better
the way
and
I
better
just
and
described.
Better and even, and I have over the last years, I will be creative in public and go home and feel like not, but I do it. It comes out of my mouth these days.
Well, that's very good. Now, let it be there when you're at home, when you're by yourself. Let yourself start just honoring what it feels like to simply be. Let me turn your attention back to the essence of the whole thing. It all comes back to this very subtle, very quiet sense of being. Everything starts there. And everybody has exactly the same feeling. That same sense of being is the same in every single one of us. We're all touching the same source, the same essence.
Hmm.
When you take up residence there, you can't help but have company, because that's where everybody comes from. And not only that, but even in the people who don't express it in the slightest, you'll see it. There's a beautiful mm-hmm. Sufi saying that says, everywhere the eye lands, it sees the face of God.
Mm.
That only happens when we find that sense of being, that we find that I am within ourselves. And when we do, relationships just blossom, they flower, because the relationship is no longer based on what you're trying to get. It is based on what on who you are and what you're giving, which is really love. Most relationships are actually just a business deal. They're a transaction. I have needs, you have needs, let's get together and meet them. And that's okay, right? Some work well, some don't. But the true relationship, the true satsangish relationship, the relationships that could last forever, that are dedicated for freedom, are not trying to find anything in another. They're trying to give to the other. They're not trying to get somebody something from somebody that the other can't really give. They're just really loving who they are and maintaining that love for who they are, and not expecting them to be anything other than to not bring to them what they can't bring. Like I said, don't ask the cat to bark. Don't ask your five-year-old to drive the car. You'll be very disappointed with the results. It can do what it can do, but it cannot give you the deepest thing that you really want, which is a sense of your own being. And that sense of being is where we all start. It's where we all live. And it's where we all end. And it's eternity itself.
Yeah.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you very much.
That was very fun. Now, I know that on Facebook, because we have had some technical difficulties here, you guys can hear me, but you can't hear what the caller is saying. So I'm sorry about that. Hopefully by next week, I will have that fixed. I know you can on YouTube, because we actually have a whole different route for what's going on Facebook. And so we'll have something set up, but you can hear me. Maybe I should repeat the questions, but I'm not used to the fact. Normally when I do things like that, they go for like 2 or 3 hours, and this is actually a scheduled radio show. So I've got another 20 minutes on the show. By the way, when the show, let me check with Skype, see if there's anybody else there. Remember, that number to call is 888-627-6008 if you want to talk live. That's the fun thing. I have some chats here on Facebook. Just somebody told me. Let's see. David said, make sure I get the mic over here as well. I've always been kind of nearsighted. I'm doing my best to read off of the YouTube screen, which is like way on the other side of the room. GP, you articulate so well what my experience is on my spiritual journey. I'm probably the only guy that's listened to your live feed while prepping for a colonoscopy in the morning. Okay, David. Yes, that is a first. I've had somebody. Good. Very good. What a great preparation. Because, you know, I started my spiritual life as a spiritual healer, a metaphysical healer, and grew into where it is now. I so love the application of spiritual truth to the physical body. It is wonderful to behold, and very, very powerful, because ultimately you'll find that the body is just another form of the same energy, that same beingness that makes us all up. It, just like, you know, red light is no less light than ultraviolet, right? So do not be the least bit, do not be concerned about your body. Really, just leave it out of your mind. It'll take care of itself. It doesn't need your mind's help. I'll do a whole show on health at some point. So, anyway, 888-627-6008. I've got some more questions here that have come in from email. You can email me, too, questions@satsangwithg.com. I can't get to them during the show, at least not during this show, maybe another time. So these are some that have come in. So until somebody from calls in, or I get another chat, I will take this email. This actually came from one of the members of the graduate group at the Master Heart Institute. Kiana is his name, and I think I pronounce it correctly. I'm not sure. I've never heard him say it. Anyway, you've said the world doesn't need us to save it, that it needs awareness. Can you expand on this, please? Brief question, right to the point. No, the world doesn't need saving. Now, people kind of, what? You know, we're looking at the carbon footprint and income inequality. And it's, I mean, yes, there's a lot of things that need to be corrected. And they will be corrected when the ego no longer runs consciousness. When the consciousness is no longer identified with a separate self that feels alone, that feels threatened, that feels estranged, that feels alienated, that feels like there's limited resources and it has to grab its little part of it. All of that is the ideas that we're holding about ourselves. All of that is the picture we have in our mind. And once that gets believed, it starts to operate as if it's a reality. You know, I don't really teach the whole metaphysics thing anymore, the law of attraction, do a little bit with that, but and the reason is simple. It's actually true. Whatever you believe strongly enough starts manifesting as your life. But at the heart and soul of it is not just, let's take that information now and get what I want. Because what's underneath the whole thing is the one belief that is causing all the others to hang around. And that's the belief in who you think you are. And that's the belief in yourself as a separate self, as a separate entity, as a being, you know, this little shivering me in the midst of this vast, cold, heartless universe that could squash me like a bug any second. That's how we see ourselves. Now, we've mitigated that somewhat by forming communities and tribes, so we feel a little bit safer, and we travel in packs, we identify with people, and we have certain beliefs, so we have others around us that make us feel more, and we dress a certain way. We conform to certain ways of acting and thinking and being so that we don't feel as separate. But the underlying sense of separation cannot be mitigated by that. The reason it can't be mitigated by that is because it's not really true. Now, the odd thing about it, that in the spiritual journey of every single being that goes on the spiritual journey, this sense of separation must emerge. It's not an accident. It's not like somehow you had the rotten childhood where you got off the track, you got conditioned to be somebody you weren't, and now you're struggling on the spiritual path to enlightenment. It's not it at all. Nothing wrong happened. The conditioning that took place, the establishment of a sense of identity which you took to be yourself, had to happen. The arising of this identity is part of the way nature works. And to come fully into the awakening, fully into who you really are, means to become consciously aware of the entire process. So first, it's like, as a child, you are this undifferentiated consciousness. Like it's like an animal, like a dog. They don't distinguish one thing. They don't have a conceptual model. Children are pure experience. But little by little, the natural functioning of the nervous system, the interacting with the environment, the restrictions put on us, the necessary restrictions put on us to keep us safe. You know, you don't stick the fork in the light socket. You don't run with scissors, which I still don't do. It's a good rule to follow, right? All of that ends up the nervous system very naturally creates a sense of identity around it, a sense of identity defined by those restrictions, and believes itself to be that. And we, the consciousness that's in the midst of the whole thing, believes it until something comes along that says, maybe that's not true. Maybe that's not what it is. And when that comes along, a questioning begins to emerge. Also, very naturally, this is grace. But consciousness begins to disidentify itself with this form and eventually sees that this form, this idea you've been entertaining about yourself, isn't actually who you are, that it is a creation of the nervous system. But because it's a creation of the nervous system, it's being implemented as a set of reactive patterns throughout the entire system, which is why you don't suddenly see God one day and everything's okay. Or you go to that retreat, you have that incredible aha moment where everything is perfect. You're walking on water and you're back in your car on Monday morning and you're yelling and flipping people off on the highway because somebody cut you off. And you go, what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The vision, consciousness seeing itself as something much more than just the functioning of the nervous system, the functioning is still happening. That first sense of seeing hasn't yet permeated or colonized the rest of it. And I'm sure most of the people listening to me have had the experience wherein they have they've had that kind of experience. They've had some kind of major breakthrough, only to have all the old habits show up very shortly afterwards and have said to themselves, I must not have gotten it. I need more work on myself. I have to do more. I'm really not getting it. How many have said that? How many have had that experience? A ton, I'm sure, right? Everybody here, everybody's had that. That is what causes the self-help treadmill, because we don't understand what really happened. Because we think somehow there's this idea, this ideal thing that's supposed to happen. And that is that when the great revelation takes place and the scales fall from your eyes and the Red Sea parts in front of you, that it's never ever going to fold over on you again. And it's simply not true. The vision you had was real, but now it's got to just move out of being a vision, and it's got to start infiltrating and shifting your beliefs, shifting your reactions, and eventually shifting your behavior, so that the word is made flesh. The vision becomes your reality and not just an experience that you had, but a living, breathing thing. You don't seek the truth anymore because you are the truth. You go from the seeker of the truth to the liver of the truth. And truth now is a living thing. And it's living as you. The you thought you were is gone. The ghost in the machine is gone. Everything's still there. Your life is still there. Friends are still there. Lovers are still there. Family is still there. The only thing that's not there is you, the you you thought you were. Nothing's lost in this transformation. As they say in Zen, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. But they don't say in Zen, we should add to it, chop wood, carry water, but there's no chopper and there's no carrier. Now that may seem mystical or strange to some of you. What do you mean I'm not there? The you think you are isn't there. The self-image you have isn't there. And it doesn't take much to look for yourself to see that it's never been very dependable anyway. You know, the image you had of yourself 5 years ago is not the image you have now. And so if we put a lot of investment in it, really, you know, you put a lot of energy in it, you really were staking your happiness there, you're not going to come out very well, are you? It's not reliable. Remember I said in the beginning, if you want permanent happiness, you got to anchor it in the place that isn't changing. You got to anchor it where the permanence is. And where's the permanence? Well, the permanence is in the consciousness that's seeing it. Your life was very different 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. It's going to be different 20 years from now. But the experiences you were having was different. But look, was the experiencing, the sense of being, any different? It was exactly the same. And in fact, no matter who you talk to, they will tell you that it is the same. And in fact, it's the same for all of us. That experience of experiencing, what it feels like to simply be, the act of perceiving, the act of experiencing, is identical for every single one of us. It's almost as if there's only one of us here, huh? No other callers, it appears. 888-627-6008. I've got about 7 minutes before I have to sign off the radio. I will stay a little bit longer on YouTube and Facebook if there are questions. Let me really quickly check Facebook to see. Ah, here's a question. Buddha's brain on YouTube. If I stay true to who I truly am, what happens to the egoic beliefs that aren't aligned with my true nature? Well, they disappear, wouldn't they? They'd go away, wouldn't they? I mean, the egoic beliefs, the ego is something that's is vastly misunderstood. Okay? Ego is simply the Greek word for I. It got turned into the demon that it is today, starting with Freud, which was good to define it. We see there's a sense of ourselves. But in modern spirituality and in personal development, it has become this demon, this entity, right? This evil entity hiding in the bushes, ready to grab us at a moment's notice. The ego is nothing more than the set of beliefs we hold about ourselves. It is the sense of I that you have. So you have this sense of I, and because you're holding that image of I, that image is going to have all sorts of beliefs around it. Okay, so I'm an Irish Catholic in the Midwest, and I had all these different kinds of experiences, and I'm recovering Catholic, I used to be doing all these things, and I do, but I've got all this energy, I've got all these traumas around, and that sort of thing. All of those are the beliefs being held about that thing. So those egoic beliefs begin to dissolve with that sense of being dissolved, and you discover that they were never true. They were only held in place by the belief in this kind of the mother of all beliefs, which is the I that you're not actually, that isn't actually you. So you don't actually even have to start taking apart the egoic beliefs. Start dismantling the ego. Is the ego who I truly am? It's a simple and beautiful inquiry to make. Is that who I really am, or is that who I just believe I am? And notice something really significant about that. When you ask the question, is the ego who I am, who's asking that question? Obviously, whatever is asking the question isn't the ego. It's sitting there looking at the ego. You are actually seeing the ego from another perspective. And what is that perspective? whatever that perspective is, it's the same one that's hearing my voice and seeing this image, that's asking this question, that's typing that question. It's not the ego. Now, the ego is alive as a set of beliefs, as a set of programmed responses within the nervous system, which is why it seems like it's very real, like it has a real life. But it doesn't have a real life. It's not an entity. It is what I oftentimes call the ghost in the machine. So as you begin to see through that, that that's not really me, the desires that you used to have that really were the desires of the ego, they begin to fade away. You see them as, oh, that's not, I don't really like that. I'm not really interested in that. I don't really care about those things. I'm much more interested in this. Something very natural takes place. The natural, unfiltered, unconditioned you begins to emerge. That's the you that I call original innocence, the original pure you prior to the conditioning. And remember, the conditioning was a function of the nervous system to keep you safe. It's not an evil thing. It's the way nature functions. There's no need to be upset with it. There's nothing wrong with it. So I hope that answers your question. The ego, the sense of a person, the sense of being this self-image, doesn't own anything. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't have any real power. All of that is given to it by you. Life is happening. The naturalness of life is happening. And on that natural functioning is how we project the sense of a person. Okay, I've got somebody online on the line here, live, but I only have 2 minutes. So ask your question really quick, and I'll try to answer it as fast as I can. Go ahead and put them through, Doug.
Yeah, this is Ann. I just have a real quick question. If I come from the I am that I am and I am God, is that not it?
Oh, wow. Boy, what a question. Thank you. The sense I am, I there's a lot of people going around saying, I am God, right? I kind of wince at that because most of the time what that is a very immature spiritual sense. Very rarely is it arising out of a real sense of innocence. And most of the time it's the ego trying to simulate what it means to be deeply spiritual. To answer that question, go deeply into the sense of being, the sense of being consciously aware. And that answer will answer itself for you. Through a direct seeing.
Well, I get when I'm looking in the mirror and
knowing.
I'm seeing my eye. Yeah, when I look in the mirror and I see the God within me, that feels very true. And like when I'm on a day like today, I feel that. Not that
good.
I'm here all the time.
Good. So, sorry to cut you off, but we have just run out of time. But it's not a feeling. Don't look for it as a feeling. Don't look at it for it as an insight. Move inward to this place that's really beyond feeling, that sense of being. And everything starts and stops there. Believe me, if you go there and stay there, it will answer every single question. You will need to do absolutely nothing.
Thank you.
It's time for me to sign off. I want to thank Doug is my radio producer on that side, on the other side of the country, for joining. I'll stay a little bit longer here on Facebook and YouTube if you had some things you wanted to contribute. So thank you all, and I'll see you next week.
You are endless.